Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Do you know, in a decade or so, you may be able to fix your Apple car yourself?
I can't fix my current car myself for anything, so that would be a nice improvement, I guess.
Well, but you won't be able to fix the steering wheel because it won't have one, according to Mark Gurman.
So they say. You know what? I don't believe it. I'm going to put my head on my head where my mouth is? I don't know what I'm saying.
You're going to pull your head out of the sand and lay down some truth.
There is so much struggle right now in the sort of legacy aspects of the car industry that we can't even make a meaningful shift to like electric cars, which is being promised in the imminent future. So the idea of a car with no controls for a person strikes me as fanciful, I guess would be the nicest way to put it. Like, I just, for Apple, a company that has demonstrated no public interest in cars whatsoever, the idea that they would just, you know, pop up one day and be like, yeah, we got this car, it has no steering wheel, it's good to go, strikes me as optimistic, I guess. I don't know.
The thing that's always gotten me is the rumor that Apple really wants to, or Google at one point had this rumor too, really wants to design a car interior without a steering wheel, without steering controls. Like, they want to basically an empty box or like a waiting room or something that you go in and then you are taken somewhere by the computers. And that's the, like, I'm inclined to believe.
I call that a bus.
I am inclined to believe that technology will be able to do better stuff with driving assist. I think that as much as I roll my eyes at the fact that Tesla brands their stuff as full,
self-driving,
which is overstating it. I have driven a Tesla with some of those features, and like some of those features are cool. And do I think that in the long run, cars are going to be able to do some of the job for us and in certain places be put on autopilot? Yes, I do.
Sure.
I share your utter disbelief that it's going to be so good that you will not need human controls at all. Where the way Mark Gurman's story about this Apple Car project puts it is, it's sort of a push and pull, right? Which is that some people just want to design it for this fantasy where there's never ever any driving required by anybody. And then he hedges it by saying, like, other people are saying there will need to be some sort of emergency something.
Yeah.
Like, you can fold a steering wheel out of the dashboard in case you need to drive it yourself or something. And I thought, you know, well, that's better than nothing. But that's where my belief in the quality of self-driving falls apart is I don't see anytime soon, certainly not in this decade, where you will be able to buy a car without controls because the self-driving is so good. I just don't see it.
I don't see it either. I think I look at Apple's track record with some of the things that it's done that have to be, mapping. Let's take a look at mapping for a second. And it's rolled out a bunch of features into its Maps app over the last several years. What's interesting about a lot of those features is that they're not evenly distributed, to borrow a phrase from William Gibson. Like, you can do a lot of stuff in, you know, the Bay Area, for example, you know, where it's really fully mapped and you've got cycling directions and you've got like AR directions. And it's like, that stuff is not available. See, here's the thing. I think Apple does a lot of stuff that it deploys in its backyard and it thinks it works great.
Yeah.
But it doesn't try it anywhere else. And I would like to see you try and run a self-driving car through Boston because I don't think you can do it.
If you could get it to 100%, which I don't think you can, but even if you could get it to 100%,
that's step one.
With 100% of the data, you would need coverage for 100% of the places if you're not going to have a steering wheel, right? Which is why I think a scenario that's far more likely, and this is already what Tesla's sort of been heading for, is there's going to be intelligent enough driving eventually so that if you're on a freeway or something, there'll be freeways that'll be green zones where you'll be allowed to like put it in full self-drive and not need to pay attention.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right?
I mean, I think that's the place where you want that feature. I don't think driving around town, you know,
and
in the city or something is necessarily where you want that.
Next step is that there'll be coverage where certain kinds of things will be self-drivable if you've got like huge amounts of data about it. But I just, even then, I don't think anybody's going to buy a car that can literally can only be driven in a very small radius because you have no controls to leave the radius. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. So
I think fundamentally, and we've talked all about self-driving stuff before, and I think fundamentally for me, it always comes down to the edge cases. And I think, you know, people aren't always great at edge cases, but I think they're usually better than computers are at
them. Yeah.
Because they can think on the fly a lot faster or just more flexibly than a lot of, you know, computer programming can. So,
well, having a human brain there to take control, like driving that Tesla where I've got my hands on the wheel and it's doing self-driving, but if it does anything that I don't like, I can be like, nah. It really taught me the lesson of sort of like, I know we're not as reliable as computers, but we are smarter than them. And that this stuff needs to be better. But even when it's better, there are going to be situations where you're like, I can't, you know, it's something goes wrong. You know, I need to take control. I need to take charge. Something's not working right. It isn't doing the right thing. And that's why this fantasy that you're going to build a thing that has no controls, essentially, or has no traditional driving controls. And maybe there's a game of telephone here in the car project, and that the truth is that they want to reinvent, you know, there will be controls, but it's not going to be a full-on steering wheel kind of stack that they have this vision of, like
Jason, I pictured driving with a touchscreen, and now I really want right? out.
Right, or a little joystick. The line that I put in my piece on Six Colors about this, my little link piece, that I'm proud enough of that I'm going to restate it here, which is, how unlikely is it that you'll be able to do this sort of thing? Like, one of the people who's trying to do this thing is also trying to put people on the moon. And that's far more likely to happen this decade than this stuff, right? Like, mm-hmm. like people on the moon on a SpaceX rocket may happen but with a few years to spare before the end of the decade. But sure. but fully self-driving cars so good that you don't need a steering wheel? No.
It's not.
Come on.
And I think, you know, it's certainly easy for the Apple car project. Let's just talk about that from an administrative point of view, right? It's been several years. We know that it's there, but it's also changed immensely. Uh-huh. There's been a ton of turnover.
Yep.
There's been a ton of direction at the top changes in terms of, we're working on this, we're working on that, we're doing, you know, we're working on a system to integrate with other car. Now we're going to make a whole car, but it's going to be a self-driving car, but it's going to be a manual car. Like, I think they don't have a clarity of vision in terms of what that is. And maybe this is a leak in an attempt to sort of put a stake in the ground. But if so, it's the wrong stake, is my opinion.
Yeah, the best I can come up with, again, leaving the steering wheel interior stuff aside, because I think that that's silly. The best I can come up with is that maybe what Apple really wants to do is see if it can crack a self-driving mode that's reliable. And that if it can get first to market there, that... that has value, and they can, you know, make a partnership with a car maker or buy a car maker or whatever they want to do in order to make it happen. They'll have a valuable hardware and software system that, when installed in a car, will be able to do this holy grail kind of thing that everybody's still trying and failing to do. Apple the company that is most likely to get there? I don't know if I would say that, but they do have money and they have hired a bunch of people, so it's possible that they will. But, you know, again, Tesla's been trying it, Google's been trying it, or Waymo, and nobody's really gotten it yet, which maybe it's right there to be cracked, or it may also mean that it's not there. Right? But it's a weird project. They're on their next leader. The thing that really blew me away about the Mark Gurman report is the credulity that he gives to the, and again, I don't think it's Mark. I think it is the people he's talking to who seem to, you know, actually believe that this thing is going to show up sometime mid-decade.
There's it's hard for me to kind of envision, given the state of where things are right now, especially with that project, which has been so tumultuous, that they'll be, you know, they can go in the next couple of years from we have this idea to, you know, actually producing a product. That I just cannot quite wrap my head around that. It seems unlikely because, you know, sure, if it were a technology product like a, laptop or a, hey, AR, VR goggles or something like that. Like, there's a, again, there's a blueprint for that. Like, even if they're pushing the envelope, there's a blueprint for that. I have a harder time envisioning Apple spinning up that entire division for something like, and then you sent me a thing the other day about a tweet about, like, you know, projecting Apple's control of the car market and how much that would be worth.
Oh, Gene Munster, like, it's our old friend, yeah, friend Gene Munster, saying, can you imagine if Apple even got 10% of the global car market, how much more money than the iPhone that would be?
Yeah, sure. If you want to just throw some random numbers in there for, yeah, like 10%. Yeah, that's great. Sure. That's a huge car market. Why not? But I think it's just the point to me that, like, all the ancillary stuff that goes around with producing cars, like, there's a lot of infrastructure to worry about. There's a lot of stuff that has to get done. It's not just about building the car, and the building the car is hard enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to say that it can't be done. Like, Tesla really has beyond what, but Tesla has been doing this for a decade plus.
A while. Yeah.
But,
exactly.
But, and so you can see them doing it where they have their, you know, they don't have dealerships and they've got their own service centers and they've really kind of like tried to do something that is outside of the standard car model and they've had a lot of success with it. So, you know, it can be done. But it takes time, and I'm not sure it can be done in the way that Apple likes to do it, which is leaving it all
quietly.
quietly until a moment where it all just appears fully formed. That doesn't seem to be something that they're going to be able to do. And yeah, I don't know. They're spending a lot of money. It's their money to spend. They make a lot of money, so they can spend a lot of money. And I'm a big believer in placing bets so that you don't get left behind. And I think the bets they're placing on AR and VR and on the car are not bad bets to make for Apple, but some bets are just not going to pay off. That's just how it is. It's like, you're going to be like, well, what if this is a thing? And you're going to spend the money and you're going to say, not a thing. Yeah. Or you're going to say, this wasn't really the thing that we wanted it to be. And maybe you sell that technology off or something. I don't know. I think I get, like, the Gurman report talks about, like, the neural engine and that they built a processor that's just got like a bazillion neural engines on it. And the whole idea there is that maybe, again, I like the idea. I get where they're going, which is like, we're so good at making these machine learning chips that we may be the only people on the planet who can make the processors that are powerful enough for this whole thing to actually work reliably. Okay, that's good, but at the same time, there's an aspect of it which is like, but that's just your chip making. Like, chip making isn't the whole thing. And I know you've got other skills too, but it's a little bit like saying we're the best, we can make the best tire in the world. It's like, okay, good, but not enough, right? Like, necessary, but
not
sufficient.
Your car is not just made out of tires. But sorry. I mean, it'd be very safe.
But I see them saying, yeah, why can't they make the whole car out of the tire? I could see them saying, you know, the real challenge here is machine learning, and we have the most powerful machine learning, blah, 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 blah. So let's build a whole chip. I also laughed where Mark Gurman's piece says something about how it's going to be a very hot chip, so they're going to have to do cooling. And I'm like, it's a car. What is hotter than a car with an internal combustion engine? Cooling a thing that's in a car is not going to be a problem. We'll figure that one out. We will find a way. We'll get a radiator, a big old radiator, and strap it on to that thing.
Yeah, not the biggest problem that you have to deal with.
Wow. Just so, like, the chip could run a little hot. It's like, okay, we'll put in some coolant. We'll
It's like saying it's going to take a lot of power.
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
Yeah.
You think?
That's, yep. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, the Apple car. Yeah. Let's talk about the right to repair and Apple's repair thing, because that's the other thing that happened this week, which is
an interesting segue, by the way, because, you know, the right to repair thing was really born out of, at least here in Massachusetts, where it was, there is a law in the books, was born out of car manufacturing and basically about independent manufacturing, you know, or repair shops being able to get access to the information, the tools, et cetera, that they needed to fix people's cars so that you didn't have to take your car to the dealership every single time.
Right. And it was that people in farming in the heartland in the Midwest where there's like DRM on tractor parts and stuff where they don't want you to fix your tractor, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So Apple introduced this thing, which I was on Tech News Weekly with Micah and Jason yesterday, and what I said to them, I reused the line that I used with Mike earlier this week, because I feel like it is such a good thing to keep in mind when you're thinking of Apple changing, which is get used to disappointment from the Princess Bride, just because just because Apple's changing, they're not going to change all the changes are not going to be in ways that you want, right? Like that's right. The thing is they're going to change, but don't get your hopes up, because they're going to change, but it's going to be limited change. They're not going to just throw the doors open. It's going to be limited. So when I look at this, I think this is good. It's not necessarily everything you've ever dreamed of.
No.
And they're doing it for very specific reasons. But that said, giving anybody access to their manuals and the ability to order parts and tools to fix their products, and there's sort of a commitment to an ongoing thing. And I actually think there's a commitment internally to engineer their products to be more repairable too.
Right, because that's the other end of this equation, right? Like, you know, we've all read the iFixit teardowns and stuff like that, where they take apart Apple products and they sort of rank how good they are. And, you know, there are places where they've clearly made improvements, but, you know, there's other stuff where it's like, don't expect this to mean that you can replace your RAM anytime soon, probably. Like, you know, especially with the stuff being built in and the M1 chips. It's not going back to the way the computers were in the 1990s and 2000s, right, where like things were repairable because you had all those components, you could swap stuff in and out. The technology has moved forward from there.
But that said, if you look at their teardown of the MacBook Pro, like the individual battery pieces just lift out.
Right, yeah. And there are improvements, 100%. Right,
which makes me think that for two reasons. One is this, you know, repairability thing, and the two is Apple also is doing repairs of their products.
It's good for them, too.
I just took two laptops in fact, to the Apple store yesterday, right? So it may also be part of an overall effort at Apple to try and engineer their products so that Apple itself can repair them more cheaply and easily. And because it costs out, like every time Apple has to throw away a motherboard and replace it under warranty when they could have just built it so that there was a cheap part that could have been replaced, that is a loss for Apple. And there's probably somebody saying, why are we engineering these things this way? Because it's going to lead to this kind of a loss. And if you change the way that this part is attached, that loss disappears. And the cost of making that change is almost zero. Like I think some of that may be going on based on what iFixit's teardowns have shown in the latest MacBooks, that maybe Apple is confident enough in their ability to miniaturize and make these things the way that they want, that they no longer feel like they have to glue everything down and solder everything on everywhere in order to make it work. Right.
And let's be clear, too, it was kind of at odds with their stated, sort of views on environmental stuff as well. Right.
It is 100%.
If they can find a way to thread that needle and be like, oh, we can make this stuff repairable and it's better for the environment because it means we can replace pieces, then that's a win for basically everybody, but especially Apple.
Right. Anytime you say you're committed to the environment, but your products are built so that when they stop working, you just have to throw them away. You have put the lie to your statement about how much you care about the environment. So there's a lot going on here that I think maybe motivated this. And I don't think it's going to be the solution of like, oh, now when your Mac has a thing, you'll just be able to unscrew a thing and it's fixed. Like, maybe. But I do think that you're going to be able to, at some point here, say, oh, I got my brand new MacBook Pro. Like, it's a few years down the line. And now it's got a battery warning. And Apple you can bring it into the store, or you can just order the battery from Apple and put it in.
I used to do that. I remember doing that, like with old, old MacBooks and like laptops. You could swap out a battery. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there. I thought John Gruber's second take on this was interesting as well, where he discussed if this opens up the ability for all those unauthorized, shops repairing your batteries or iPhone screens to now get like legit parts and, legit instructions on how to do this, I think there's a smart move here because from everything I've heard, it sounds like Apple has just been like inundated with repair stuff.
Yeah.
Like everybody I've talked to suggests like the turnaround times are often very long, or it's just, stuff takes longer than you want it to. Parts have been in short supply in some places. I don't know if that helped fix this, but it certainly seems like it would take pressure off Apple stores. Like it used to be you could walk into a Genius Bar and have an appointment. Now it's like you got to make an appointment like 4 days in advance or something. I think opening it up might help.
I think it's also and Gruber mentioned this, and I mentioned this to Micah yesterday, it's also the reality of the fact that a lot of people are nowhere near a place that will repair their Mac, even maybe an authorized, non-Apple, but authorized repair. Like, no, it's actually, United States alone, like, it's a big place. There are people who live, Micah was saying, it's a three-hour drive for him to get to the Apple store from where he lived in Missouri, right? And so this is also that, which is, it's the people, it's the tech in the town that may not be authorized, but can now get the parts and fix that thing for you, and can stock parts and fix them.
Right.
And like, it's not going to be wholesale revolutionary. And they're also like, they're getting their parts, non-Apple parts that may be from exactly the same place as the Apple parts.
Sure.
Right. But like, but it's a positive way forward, because it's very easy to just say, oh, well, just go to the Apple store. I live 5 minutes from an Apple store, right?
Right,
it's easy for me, but I grew up out in a rural area where there was nothing, right? So I think that we got to keep that in mind, that this isn't a Apple store solution, and it's not always just about, well, will you save money on these parts, which you won't save a whole lot. It's also access to this stuff in places that where it's harder to get help.
Yeah, no, I think there are, in the end, and this is, I wrote my piece at Macworld for next week, is a lot about sort of pressuring Apple into changing things from various sources, whether it's outside or customers or what have you. And as you said, and I think I agree, you know, just because Apple is pressured to change these things also means, you know, Apple is doing things that are good for it in the long term, right? You know, whether it's this case where it's like, okay, well, it helps us because it makes us, you know, more able to repair things easily, or it lets us take some of the pressure off our Apple stores and therefore have, you know, better throughput in terms of people coming through and fixing stuff quickly, or just environmentally, right? Like, those are all benefits for Apple in the long run. So it's not as though it's doing these things totally out of the goodness of its own heart. And of course, there's also, in this case, there was like sort of a looming specter of, I think it was something related to shareholder propositions that might ended up having ramifications for them. So it's not like it's doing this just because it's the right thing to do, quote unquote, but it's doing it because it's a good thing for it and for us. And I think that's true of a lot of the changes Apple ends up making, even if it's changes where they're dragged kicking and screaming to making them, they end up being things that I think long-term have a potential to benefit Apple, even if it seems like short-term, they're not. I'm thinking about like the external linking thing too, which I know you guys talked about.
Yeah.
I think that's something that in the long-term actually has a benefit for Apple, but in the short-term, I can see why they feel like, oh no, we're losing control, but it makes things better for consumers in a lot of cases, and that does help Apple. It just, you know, it's not as tangible as money in your pocket right there.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes it's about their closely held sort of cultural stuff that they just don't want to change. I do think there's a, if it ain't broke, don't fix it approach at Apple, and I think that they've got so much they could do, because literally they could do anything, that there's a prioritization issue too, which is like, is this a priority for us? And I think at Apple, so often the priority is moving things forward on their product categories, you know, and pushing the ball forward and not necessarily saying, but wait a second, what about repairing our products? It's like, well, is there an incentive among the people who make Apple's products to worry about the repairability of them? Certainly at some points there hasn't been. And in some cases, that's fine, right? Like, remember, everybody screamed bloody murder about the fact that you couldn't have a replaceable battery in an iPhone or in later MacBook products. Like, how dare you not have it be that I can pop one out and pop another one in? And at the time, Apple's response was something like, but we can make it much thinner and lighter and better if we do it this way. There comes a time, though, where you've now kind of exited the toughest part of like an initial product design, and you've got a little more latitude and a little more freedom to try and push it back the other way. Not necessarily to bring in a battery you can pop out, but you know, at some point you look at an iPhone design and you're like, yeah, we could engineer that to be a little more modular.
Right.
Whereas
right.
In the early days of the iPhone, that was not a thing they were going to be able to do.
Right. Yeah, the evolution slows too, right? Like, because
exactly.
You know, you look at the last three or four and you're like, well, you know, we've kind of got this down now, right? Like, we kind of, okay, now that we've figured out sort of like how we can make these reliably year after year and we're not really changing the like the interior that much, we can afford to play around and find ways to make this a little easier.
And with the M1 Max, not only does Apple control everything in a way that they didn't before, but they also gained some room physically because of the thermals changing. And like, if there was ever a time for Apple to sort of say, let's make this a little more, let's listen to all of our people who are like, you got to make these things more repairable. It's killing us. Cause I have to replace a whole motherboard under warranty. Now's the time, especially on the Mac side. So I think that we'll see more of that. But you know, again, is it going to be a revolution? No, but it's a good step. And I think that, as surprising as it was that Apple made it, and it probably made it because of all sorts of different pressures, what a thing. And then I was listening to Connected yesterday, and they were speculating about, like, are we going to be able to buy like an Apple Pentalobe screwdriver or something, right? Like, is that Apple going to sell their own
tools?
I know,
they
right?
Said tools, yeah.
Right. So is that going to just be a generic one, or is it going to be like an Apple tool? I don't know. Anybody who's seen the App Store back end or the podcast back end, I will tell you there are two Apples, friends. There's the Apple that makes products for regular people and they're beautiful. And then there's the Apple that builds things for the people working backstage and they are not beautiful. They are awful. And so maybe that screwdriver will be great, or maybe that screwdriver will be badly designed. Yeah.
Is it a polishing cloth or is it?
I don't know.
I was actually just thinking today again, I don't remember why it popped in my head, but I was thinking about the Apple TV screeners app, which I know is not something they make, but still it's something that had their name on it when we were doing the For All Mankind
podcast. Oh, yeah.
Just how bad it was. It's like, man, you feel like you're a company who prides yourself on how great you are at these things, and then you're going to farm that out to somebody who's going to do a real crappy job? Oof.
Yeah.
What a choice.
Not good. Well, something happened. I every week we get to this point and I'm like, will there be something next week? And now next week there's Thanksgiving. So
yeah, that's
nothing.
That is a thing, I guess. So
should we officially take next week off, do you think?
I think we should. I'm actually going to be traveling on Friday. I don't know what time, but
friends,
I'm traveling.
Friends, the February, what am I doing? Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. The
still March 2020,
the
Jason.
Friday, November 26th edition of the Six Colors podcast is hereby canceled.
Sorry, calendar.
We'll be back December. No, I can't believe it. December 3rd.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I had to send in an invoice today and it had November in it. I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's getting serious. So we're going to take next week off for Thanksgiving here in the USA. For those outside the USA, Thanksgiving is a turkey-oriented holiday. I'm not going
to explain
it.
It's the best way to just clarify it.
That's right.
It's about eating food. It's the best
food.
Kind of holiday.
It's a family and feast kind of thing. And then there's Black Friday, which would be that next day that we're canceling the podcast. That's Black Friday, which is...
It's because we're going to be looking at all the deals.
It's a bad day. Yeah. Yeah, just... you don't want to listen to a podcast on that day, right? Because you're going to be about all those deals.
You're clicking through.
You got to click the deals. You got to... It's like Prime Day, except in November.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, and happy Prime Day to those who celebrate. I don't actually know when Prime Day is. It's whenever Amazon wants. It's
basically, yeah. Whenever.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.